Welcome to the good, the bad, and the ugly of self-storage, your go-to podcast for mastering the self-storage industry. Join host Michael Cunningham and his son Dylan Cunningham as they share insider knowledge, firsthand experiences, and practical advice. Each episode, they dive into real stories from lucrative deals and strategic renovations to the challenges and pitfalls that await. Whether you're a seasoned operator or new to the industry, learn how to succeed, avoid common traps, and seize great opportunities. Tune in to hear their journey, lessons learned, and secrets to making your storage facility a success. Unlock the potential of self-storage with us.
Welcome back, everyone, to episode 8 of The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly of Self-Storage. I'm Dylan Cunningham, and today we're diving into two critical aspects of building and maintaining a self-storage facility: stormwater management and landscaping. These are not just about compliance and aesthetics. They play a big role in your facility's overall success. With me, as always, is my dad, Mike Cunningham. Dad, let's start with stormwater. What exactly is it, and why is managing it so important, especially in California?
Yeah, Dylan, great question. Storm water is basically rainwater or melted snow that doesn't soak into the ground, but instead runs off surfaces like the roof, driveways, and parking lots. In California, managing stormwater is a big deal because of environmental regulations. We need to collect, control, and filter all stormwater on our properties to prevent flooding and reduce pollution in the natural waterways.
Got it.
But as always, before we dive into this episode, our podcast is for entertainment purposes and intended as a springboard for anyone interested in self-storage and potentially considering building their own self-storage facility. Always consult with professionals that specialize in this type of work before you invest.
Let's get into it.
So, Dylan, when developing a self-storage facility in California, are you required to capture all the stormwater on your site and direct it into a detention pond or similar system?
Yeah, absolutely. California regulations require most new developments, including self-storage, to manage all stormwater on site. So this includes capturing runoff from all impervious surfaces like roofs and concrete pads, and directing it to a detention or retention system. So it's all about preventing unfiltered water from entering public stormwater systems or natural waterways.
Correct.
So Dad, what happens to the water once it's collected? Does it filter back into the earth and replenish aquifers?
Yeah, that's a great question, and something we thought as well in the beginning, but it depends on the system. In most cases, stormwater is either temporarily stored and released into the city or county drainage system or allowed to infiltrate into the soil if regulations permit. So here's how it works. There's detention ponds. They temporarily store water and slowly release it into the municipal system, so no aquifer recharge. There's retention ponds. They hold water longer, allowing some evaporation and soil absorption, but they're not always designed for full aquifer replenishment. And then there's the underground detention systems. They store water in large chambers and typically release it slowly into the storm systems, meaning the water doesn't replenish the ground. And then there's permeable pavement or infiltration basins, and they're best for aquifer recharge because they allow water to soak directly into the soil rather than running off into the drains. You know, California has strict regulations, so some areas prohibit infiltration to protect the groundwater quality, while others encourage it to replenish the water supply. So
gotcha.
That's kind of the gist of it.
All right, perfect. No, that was a great kind of summary of it all. So Pops, I know you're a big fan of designing ponds as landscaping features. How does that work?
Yeah, so obviously it's just a big hole. So you want to try to make that look aesthetically good on your property. You know, you can create a natural looking pond with native plants, you know, wetland and, you know, kind of around the edges. This approach can, you know, eliminate the need for fencing because obviously if it's a deep hole, they're going to want it to have it fenced. But if you do a slow, gradual elevation down to it and then landscape around it, it's super appealing to the property. If it's done right, of course. And you know, obviously it's going to help with stormwater management and blend seamlessly kind of into the surrounding area. It almost looks natural at that point. That's the goal.
Perfect. Yeah, that's great advice.
So Dylan, what would you say is the best time to handle, you know, the pond excavation? That's kind of the first step. You know, we're building the pond. We got to get the hole dug. What's the best time of the year to do this?
Yeah, that's honestly a super important question because we kind of ran into this problem on the current project that we're working on. It's definitely best to schedule this during the dry months of the year. This helps avoid, you know, all the weather-related delays and keeps, you know, erosion control costs down. Also, you know, once grading is complete, it's smart to stabilize slopes early by hydroseeding or planting ground cover. This practice can prevent erosion and minimize the need for regrading and repairs. So.
Yeah, obviously on this last project, we dug our hole actually in the summer, but we didn't have time to actually work on it. And the winter came and we started to lose some of it, right? And
right.
It started to erode on us, and it's going to create a lot more work for us because of that fact.
Yeah, we're realizing that was a mistake as of right now, actually. Yeah, so moving forward, when you're working with a landscape architect on an irrigation system, do you think it's important to discuss which manufacturers they use?
Absolutely. Not all irrigation systems are created equal, and different brands offer different features. The most commonly used suppliers in commercial landscaping, and these are household names like Rainbird, Hunter Industry, Toro, Netafirm. Each have their own strengths. Rainbird is just a great all-around choice. It's reliable, affordable, widely available. Hunter offers advanced features like Wi-Fi enabled controllers. You know, so does Rainbird, but theirs seem to be a little bit more sophisticated. Toro is known for its durability and often used in, you know, super huge, large-scale projects. Netafim specializes in drip and micro irrigation. We just had to use it on our last project, but again, they make, you know, really nice products for micro irrigation.
Gotcha. Which one would you say is the most affordable?
I would say Rainbird for sure is the most budget-friendly option, while still offering like great reliability. Hunter and Toro tend to be slightly higher in price, but, you know, come in with some pretty cool features that, you know, might make it worth the additional amount. Netafim is usually the most expensive because it's a really specialized, high-efficiency drip irrigation system, and it was called out on our last project and, you know, very expensive in our opinion.
Gotcha. So if cost is a concern, it's best to ask the landscape architect about brand selection before finalizing the irrigation plan.
Absolutely. Well, and then some brands are just easier to source and obviously much more cost effective depending on the location. This can make a huge difference between, you know, I would say thousands of dollars.
Awesome. Now, you know, I always got to ask, do you have any good, bad, or ugly stories related to stormwater or landscaping?
Well, kind of just touched on it a little bit with our current project. We made a huge mistake by, you know, digging the stormwater ponds during the rough grading phase. It seemed like the right time to do it, but then we didn't get a chance to build the retaining walls before winter, and we had a few heavy storms, and the sides of the pond started to erode. I mean, it's created a big mess. So we're going to have to excavate and stabilize everything, you know, prior to, you know, going in and building the retaining wall. So lesson learned, you know, don't dig the ponds until you have the time to finish the job.
That's a great tip. It's really all about the timing and planning, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, these are, you know, pitfalls, like, and that's what we're trying to bring to this podcast, that it doesn't always go smooth. There are, and hopefully you guys can learn from our mistakes. And, you know, if you're building a project and, you know, the grading engineer is saying, hey, let's dig all this now, it makes the most sense. If you can get to it, it makes sense. But if you can't, it doesn't.
Right. No, I completely agree. And, you know, we're hitting ourselves in our head right now because of that mistake. So, you know, it's great to, you know, share our experience from this type of stuff. And hopefully the listeners out there can learn from our mistakes so that you're not shooting yourself in the foot like we are right now.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think that's it for today. You know, we talked about stormwater management systems and overflow strategies, also landscaping tips and irrigation system choices. Dad, finally, you know, what's your one piece of advice for developers dealing with these challenges today?
I would say work closely with your civil engineer and landscaper right from the start. I mean, the more you plan ahead and understand the costs associated with materials and labor, the fewer surprises you're going to encounter. Make sure you are upfront with everyone designing your project. That value engineering is super important to you. I can't stress that enough. You want them to provide samples and what materials they're going to use. It will save you thousands of dollars in the long run. So make sure that you're insinuating that you want it to be value engineered.
All right, that's it for episode 8 of The Good,
The Bad,
and The Ugly of Self-Storage. Next time, we'll dive into Live, Work, Store, building effective office and residential spaces at your facility. One last thing, if you write us a review on the platform you listen from and send it to us at info@selfstoragebrokeragegroup.com, we will send you our must-have, the 50 money-saving questions to ask the professionals if you're thinking about building a self-storage facility. Thanks for tuning in, and don't forget to like and subscribe.
Thanks for tuning in to The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly of Self-Storage. We hope you found today's episode valuable. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like us, leave a review, and share it with others. For more tips and updates, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also listen to us on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, let's unlock the potential of self-storage together.